This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. The Obama administration has lifted a deep water drilling moratorium it had imposed last May after the BP oil well explosion. At the time, 11 workers were killed. More than 200 million gallons of oil spilled into the Gulf, and an industry critical to the region was put on hold. Even with the ban lifted, drilling isn't expected to resume immediately, so rig workers remain in limbo. Kathy Lohr spent time with one Louisiana family trying to cope with that uncertainty.
Ken Tangus and his wife Jeanette live in Houma, Louisiana, a small city south of New Orleans in the heart of Cajun swamp country that's long depended on fishing and on the oil industry. For most of Ken's life, he's been a mechanic for Diamond Offshore Drilling, one of the largest drilling companies in the world. Since last spring, his rig and others have been shut down, but he's still on the payroll. Like many others, he's doing maintenance work, even though there's not much to do. Diamond has laid off more than 300 workers, including about 50 on Tangus's rig, and that hit him hard.
You always have it in the back of your mind, you know, that while you're home, that phone can ring, you look on there, Diamond Offshore will be on there, and do I answer or don't I answer, you know?
Tangus works on a rig called the Ocean Monarch. He's 53 and stocky, with a full head of gray hair. He says many of the rigs are offshore, waiting.
Presently, we have three deep water rigs stacked there, and let's see, one, two, three, four, five jackup rigs stacked over there. We're just waiting on work.
And despite the moratorium being lifted, Ken's wife Jeanette Tangus says life is still pretty much on hold.
You don't buy anything because is he going to go back to work? You think about it all the time. That's what's the worst part, is it hangs over your head. It's been hanging over our head since, what, May?
Yeah.
Each time he leaves to go to work, it's like, yay, maybe we'll get three more weeks, you know? It's hard living like that.
Outside the family's suburban ranch-style home, several yard signs show their support for the New Orleans Saints, and one red and white one shows their opposition to the moratorium. Since the moratorium, Ken works 3 weeks on and 3 weeks off, and on one of those recent days off, Ken is busy painting and doing chores around the house.
It's a good thing you cook good, because you couldn't afford to pay me by the hour.
Tangus knows he makes a good living. He still gets his regular salary of about $100,000 a year. But because he doesn't know when drilling will begin, Ken says he's still worried.
How easy is it going to be for me to find another job? Who's going to want to hire somebody, you know, middle-aged guy? And who's going to pay me the amount of money I'm making now? I mean, granted, I would take whatever I could get. But at the same time, it's like, you know, am I going to wind up having to lose my house? I've noticed since I've been home for this past week, driving around the neighborhood, that I see more for sale signs out.
It's people leaving because of the oil field. You know, you have to go here, you have to go there. I mean, it's just scary.
Hundreds of oil and gas workers have lost their jobs. Others have been reassigned to rigs outside the U.S. At least four deepwater rigs have left the Gulf, and it will be years before they could return. Diamond alone has moved three rigs out of the Gulf and sent them to the Congo, to Egypt, and to Brazil. Ken and Jeanette were relieved that the moratorium was lifted, but Ken says he has no clue how long it will take for companies to get new permits and for the industry to be up and running again. So he's still worried that companies will cut more employees.
I don't want a handout from the government. I don't want a handout from BP. I don't want anything. I just want to go back to work. I want to go back to drilling.
Ken Tangus worked on a rig overseas years ago and vowed he wouldn't do it again because he wants to stay close to home. But as the uncertainty drags on, he now says he'd take that option rather than lose his job altogether. Kathy Lohr, NPR News.
Now from the environmental impact of the Gulf spill to the economic impact of the deepwater drilling ban that followed. Yesterday, the White House lifted its six-month moratorium, but many businesses that depend on the oil industry say the Gulf Coast is only beginning to feel the full impact of that drilling ban. NPR's Kathy Lohr reports.
A recent federal government report played down the damage, saying the moratorium had created only a temporary loss of some 8,000 to 12,000 jobs. Many in Louisiana say that's just not true.
We might have had 3% or 4% unemployment, and now it's creeping up.
Eric Smith is associate director of the Tulane Energy Institute in New Orleans. It is true this region has been sheltered from high unemployment that much of the country has seen, and that's largely because of the success of the oil and gas industry. But Smith says the region has lost at least 10,000 jobs directly due to the moratorium and thousands of others indirectly. And Smith says some of the jobs created are not the same kind of stable, high-paying jobs that have been lost.
So if I lay off 500 drilling workers and I hire 500 people that I pay $12 an hour to sweep up the beach, that's a net loss for Louisiana.
About 100 miles south of New Orleans, Port Fouchon is a key support center for the oil and gas industry. But it's a lot quieter these days. Helicopters that used to take thousands of employees out to drilling rigs each month are now silent. Chet Chasson is the port's director.
You see this parking lot that could probably handle about 350 cars or so, and you might see, 35, 40 cars in this parking lot. Before April 20th, this parking lot was full.
Chasson says companies have moved out much of their equipment, rigs are no longer being serviced, and the port cut its rental rates by 30% to try to keep business here.
What many companies have had to do is cut hours, cut overtime, cut salaries, freeze salaries. They've had to look at themselves and see, well, we can't spend money on that. We can't expand. We can't do this maintenance work.
Smaller businesses that support the oil industry have also had a hard time since last spring when the BP well exploded. RigChem in Houma, Louisiana, employs 50 people. It provides chemicals to deep water drillers when they're finishing off their new wells.
When there are no rigs operating, there's nothing for us to do.
RigChem co-owner Lori Davis says the company has been through hurricanes that have temporarily shut down the business, but she's never seen a more difficult time than this. And for the first time ever, she's had to apply for a line of credit.
Getting money from banks, it's very hard right now. And then when you don't have the receivables to pledge to get a line of credit, banks don't want to take the risk. So if you don't have a good relationship with a bank right now, you're really in trouble.
Davis got the line of credit, but she still doesn't know when she'll see business pick up. If things don't improve by December, Davis says she'll have to cut jobs. Over in Golden Meadow, Louisiana, Rose's Cafe is not as packed as usual. Billy Joe Brunet, a contract welder, is one of the regulars here who is lamenting his situation.
You know, if the oil field's not spending money, then it doesn't trickle down to us.
People who live in this area are angry at BP because of the oil spill, but they're just as angry at the federal government for having banned deep water drilling. Brunet says it was the government that created economic uncertainty that didn't exist before, and he remains pessimistic.
Down here in Lafourche Parish, I want to say we were in the top 10 in the nation as far as having the lowest unemployment. You know, if you can't find a job down here, you don't want to work, okay, basically. But we're going to be 10%, 15% unemployment down here because of a moratorium, because of one company's mistake.
Even with the drilling ban lifted, business people along the Gulf say it could take months or even years for them to recover. Kathy Lohr, NPR News.
Attorneys general from all 50 states are jumping into the mortgage controversy that's put a freeze on foreclosures in much of the country. At issue is whether several major banks submitted faulty legal documents while foreclosing on tens of thousands of homes. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, the states are launching a joint investigation.
No one knows how big this foreclosure problem really is. That's one of the things the state's top law enforcement officials are trying to figure out. What we do know is that in sworn testimony, employees of both J.P. Morgan Chase and GMAC Mortgage admitted to signing stacks of foreclosure documents without verifying that what they were signing was really true. And now numerous other firms that handle mortgages are scrambling to vet their own foreclosure files. The financial firms say these are simply technical issues. Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray says it's much more serious.
This is not just a fourth grade student not quite filling in the oval on a multiple choice exam. This is fraud. They have submitted affidavits that apparently where they swear under oath things that are in fact not true, and they have a lot of exposure here.
And it seems the attorneys general intend to use that exposure and their combined clout to pressure the firms to do more loan modifications. They'd like to see the lenders taking more dramatic steps to keep borrowers in their homes by reducing the amount they owe on the loan, not just the interest rate.
We're going to work with them to clean it up, but they have to understand that they need to reach out to borrowers and make it right in a way that they might not have done had they not created all this exposure for themselves that they now have.
But not all the AGs are convinced this investigation is going to be a boon for struggling homeowners.
Will this help people stay in their homes? I'm not sure that that's what we're going to find.
Greg Zeller is Indiana's attorney general. He says in Indiana, it looks like many of the problematic documents were in foreclosure cases where the homeowners had already given up.
A lot of these are default foreclosure judgments, which means that people never showed up. It's not like the homeowner is arguing that they want to keep the mortgage. Some of them have abandoned the properties.
J.P. Morgan Chase says by the time the homes in its portfolio get to the point of a foreclosure sale, the average loan has been delinquent for more than a year. The bank announced today it's now reviewing 115,000 foreclosure files. And all this uncertainty is rippling into the housing market, where foreclosures now represent about a quarter of home sales. Lucien Salvant is with the National Association of Realtors.
This is going to stop everything in its tracks until they get this critical problem resolved.
Already, he says, realtors are reporting delayed sales of foreclosed properties and even homes being pulled from the market. Most economists say it's going to be difficult for the housing market to recover with all these foreclosures piling up. Paul Miller is a financial analyst at FBR Capital Markets.
There are currently 2 million homes working through the foreclosure process now. And this is like a giant highway. If you stop the first car, all the cars behind it has to stop.
He says the 50-state investigation may only slow this process down. The attorneys general say they know the stakes are high. And by working together, they hope to put an end to the uncertainty sooner rather than later. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow, Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, will outline his latest plan to resuscitate the U.S. economy. For some details, we turn now to our favorite Fed watcher, David Wessel, the economics editor of the Wall Street Journal. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Renee.
Now, the Fed has held short-term interest rates near zero for almost 2 years, but Ben Bernanke insists that the Fed can do more. But you want to know what more is there for it to do?
Well, that's right, Renee. Ben Bernanke is thinking about something that they call quantitative easing. As you point out, he cut short-term interest rates, the overnight rates that banks pay, down to zero. And then they went beyond that and they bought $1.7 trillion worth of bonds and mortgages to push down the long-term interest rates set in bond markets, the ones that determine mortgage rates and corporate borrowing rates. That was an extraordinary effort. They suspended it in March because they thought kind of job done. But now with inflation running lower than the Fed's target and unemployment much higher than the Fed's target and no prospect of it coming down rapidly, the Fed is basically signaling they're going to resume this bond buying, a decision they'll probably make at their meeting in early November.
And now how does that work? You're talking about quantitative easing.
Well, basically what they do is they buy a lot of bonds. When you buy a lot of bonds, the price goes up and the yield or the interest rate on them goes down. That makes it interest rates lower, and the Fed hopes that people will borrow more, but they know that in today's climate that's unlikely. So part of the game is to kind of chase investors out of treasuries, because the Fed will be buying those, and instead push them into riskier securities like the stock market, so the stock market will go up.
And am I hearing you right? The Fed is trying to make the stock market go up?
Well, that's not exactly how Mr. Bernanke will put it in his speech on Friday. But yes, the Fed is hoping that by boosting the price of stocks and other assets, that'll make everybody feel a little bit richer and everybody will spend a little more readily and the economy will grow just a little bit faster and we'll get to the point of full employment sooner.
But wasn't it low interest rates and excessive borrowing that created the housing bubble, which, you know, many of us would say got us in the mess we're in, or at least was a big part of it? Why would the Fed try those policies again.
Well, that is a risk, and that's why some officials at the Fed are kind of or distinctly enthusiastic about doing this. But Mr. Bernanke's calculus is pretty straightforward. Yes, there are risks to spending another $500 billion on buying bonds and trying to get people to borrow and lend and having all this money sloshing around the system. But I think that in his judgment, to do nothing is worse. To do nothing is to tolerate slow growth and high unemployment and fears that we're slipping into deflation. And so he just basically isn't willing to stand by and say, I could do something, but I'm afraid to do it. He's trying to prevent the U.S. from repeating the experience of Japan by having a decade of stagnation and low growth and deflation fears.
Okay, if the Fed is talking about doing more to stimulate the economy, it looks like it could really do that. Would that influence Congress? That is, make it look towards stimulating the economy as well? I mean, at the moment, that's bad politics, I think, but would that change?
Maybe. I don't know. Predicting the Fed is relatively easy these days. Predicting what Congress is going to do is almost impossible. In this instance, I think the Fed actually would prefer that Congress did something. They'd prefer that Congress did some short-term stimulus and package it with a believable deficit reduction plan. But they don't think that's going to happen. And so they're not prepared to let the economy languish while the politicians bicker and have partisan stuff and the economy just doesn't go anywhere. So they're kind of stepping into the vacuum. Ironically, that's what happened at the beginning of the financial crisis. When Congress and the president couldn't fight back, the Fed did. And we seem to be right back at that point again.
David, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
David Wessel is economics editor of The Wall Street Journal and a frequent guest on our program.